Lunchtime Live with Andrea Gilligan
with insurancebroker.ie
on News Talk.
A recent study carried out by the Dublin Rape Crisis Centre discovered that younger men have troubling attitudes towards sexual consent, with 43% of men under 45 agreeing that sometimes people say no when they want convincing. With consent still, it appears, a grey area, do we need to have more discussions and conversations about what consent actually is and what it looks like? And how do we have those conversations with our partners and our children? Well, CEO of the Dublin Rape Crisis Centre, Rachel Morrow, is with me on the line. Rachel, good afternoon to you. You might bring me through some of the additional findings of this study because they're really interesting.
Hi, Ciara. Yeah, certainly I can. So the research that we published today, it really is a mixed bag of findings. On the upside, 9 in 10 people understand that everyone has the right to change their mind during a sexual encounter, and almost half the population want to know more about consent. But as you said, there are some really worrying downsides too, such as the rising number of young men who think that women say no to sex when they just want to be persuaded. And 1 in 4 men under 45 say they would probably keep going if they suspected their partner wasn't enjoying a sexual encounter. And these findings are hugely worrying because not only do they have real life consequences, but the trend is going in the wrong direction. And although at a population level, the people who hold these beliefs is increasing, the cohort that is driving the shift and is significantly more likely to hold these views are young men. So, for instance, a staggering 54% of men aged between 18 to 24 agree with that statement that women say no to sex, but that's just because they need to be persuaded or cajoled into agreeing. And I do think that people are very quick to point the finger at young men and blame them for holding those views. And I think that maybe we need to change the narrative around that and consider that these views are evidence that as a society, we have not successfully engaged and connected with them. And we need to get to the root cause of why this group of people hold these views when others don't. And
yeah, but more than that,
too much better.
Even Rachel, was that these regressive narratives around masculinity and sex and power, not only are they persisting, but they actually are gaining ground. So we might have been winning the battle, but we're beginning to lose it again. What are you putting that down to?
Yeah, it's like 2 steps forward, 2 steps back. And sometimes it does feel like that because we've been tracking these questions since 2021 and we feel like we're making progress and then we go backwards. And I think that there's really complex reasons as to why we're seeing this slide backwards. Some of these men and boys have gone through the SPHE program. Now, it's not the updated SPHE where they haven't done the junior and senior, the new cycles. But clearly, we haven't been engaging with them in the way that we need to. And I'm a parent of a boy and a girl, and it's as important to me that my boy understands consent as much as my girl. And I think that, you know, we've been successful with the girls and they understand consent very well. But boys, we haven't been as good with. And I think that partly it's because they're getting their information in other places earlier than they are the SPHE information. So perhaps we need to start educating them earlier. We need to be open to having conversations with them. Certainly, there's a really critical role for parents to be equipped to have these conversations. And we need to train and support our teachers as well for the conversations that they're having in the classroom.
Consent is obviously important in all types of relationships. It's a conversation that should be ongoing. But is it a conversation that changes as your relationship changes, do you think?
I think that it probably does change. And I think that people understand that consent needs to be present, but they're not entirely sure how to put it into practice. So maybe we need to give people more practical tools about how to recognise when consent is present and when it may not be present. Because one of the questions we asked was around, would you keep going if your partner was visibly not enjoying the experience? And nearly 1 in 4 men under 45 said that they would keep going. And that's up 3%, like you said, Ciara. And I think that what we're concerned about is that people do, they're increasingly hearing this word consent, but if they don't know how to push it into practice, then it means nothing. And at Dublin Rape Crisis Centre, we do have information on our website about some practical tools that people can use, you know, things they can say when they're engaging in a sexual encounter that may help them and support them to having these healthy relationships that will help all of us live a healthier life.
I mean, a lot of people think that consent is about the absence of resistance. It's much more than that, isn't it?
Absolutely. It has to be freely given. It's voluntary, and it allows each of us to decide what we want to do and what we do not want to do in a sexual encounter, and to have that respected. And it can be verbal or it can be non-verbal, but it needs to be freely given by individuals who are capable of consenting. And as I said, Kira, we do have even phrases on our website that people can use, you know, asking permission before you change the type of sexual activity, with phrases like, is this okay? Or tell me what you like. Does this feel good? Like, it's very basic, but people do struggle to understand how they can push it into practice. And that's what We Consent is all about, the campaign that Dublin Rape Crisis Centre runs, about changing opinions around consent and supporting people, as I said, to put these into practice.
Stay with us on the line there, Rachel, but we're also joined by Jennifer Horgan, Mammy of Ireland, Irish Examiner columnist and a secondary school teacher. Jennifer, lovely to talk to you as always. When is consent being talked about in schools?
Hi, Kira. It was really interesting to listen to Rachel there, and just backing everything she has to say. I would say consent in some form is being spoken about across schools from a very young age. In primary school also, in an age appropriate way, you know, so just making young children aware that they have choices. And this is like when you might hear a teacher saying, do you want a high five or a side hug, or, you know, just making that, making young people aware of their autonomy. I think the problem is that there's no consistency. That's that, you know, like in secondary school, we do teach SPHE at junior cycle and senior cycle. Now, the senior cycle specification has just come out, and schools have until 2027 to make sure that all senior cycle students are being taught the subject. But there's still, you know, schools can put ethos before the course, so they can say, actually, this isn't in keeping with our ethos. And so we can't really be certain that every child is getting the education that they should be getting.
But then I suppose there'll be those who argue, look, we can't keep putting all of this responsibility on teachers. I was talking about AI in the classrooms on the podcast, News Talk Daily, and there was resistance, of course, from teachers saying, you know, us again, is it not up to parents to have that conversation with their children, to take on that responsibility?
I have sympathy for that, you know, because I see myself, there is a lack of resources. It's really hard to get training. You have no option to actually take SPHE as a subject in college when you're training to be a teacher. So teachers do often feel ill-equipped, they're nervous, they're aware how important the topic is. But at the same time, in an ideal world, we're sharing responsibility. So parents and teachers are working together from when children are very young. And there's a shared vocabulary there. That's what we want. We want consistency, you know, that young people are getting the same message at home and in school. And so that's why, you know, consistency of training and of resourcing, I think, is so important.
You see, there's a difficulty, isn't there, for parents? Because I'm thinking, I have young children, but I don't ever remember a conversation around consent being discussed either at home or in the school classroom environment. It just wasn't in existence in the 1980s and 1990s. So are parents actually equipped? Do they have the language themselves to talk about consent? Do they understand it?
Exactly. OK, I think you're spot on. And that's something I'm a parent too. I've got a teenage boy and a teenage girl. And growing up in the 80s and the 90s, it wasn't discussed. And we need to hit that head on, you know, because we're on the back foot. So, yeah, parents need support. They need to, I think, firstly push through their own discomfort because it is uncomfortable for us. But then we need to look up resources ourselves. We need to get support. We need to work with schools. And I think, you know, a lot of us do it without realizing we're doing it. You know, we'll talk to our kids about things like, you know, we'll say things like, is it okay if I do this? Or, you know, we make them aware of like different parts of their bodies. We teach them the names of different body parts. So we are, I think we are changing as parents. And we're, I think I'll often speak to friends and, you know, the conversations are happening. But I think absolutely parents need more support.
Yeah, I spoke to a parent recently who had a child in the junior cycle at school and the kids were playing kiss chase in the schoolyard. And her child was kissed. Yeah. And she wasn't quite sure how to approach it. She didn't want to make the child uncomfortable, but she didn't know how to inform the child that, you know, you have a right to say, I don't want to be kissed, or you don't have permission to kiss me. And it was awkward. She kind of entered into the conversation with no idea where to go with it.
Yeah, and I, you know, that's difficult, isn't it? And I think that parents reaching out to schools is really healthy. I think sometimes parents can be a bit reluctant to do so. But it's so important that the teachers in the school are aware that that's happening. And I suppose with parenting, it's going with your gut to a certain extent. But I think, again, coming back to that shared vocabulary, this is happening for that parent. So the parent does need to go and get help and ask someone, OK, well, what is the best way to frame this? And I think as parents, we have to be honest. We don't always know what we're doing.
No.
And when we are stuck, we need to go and get help and ask someone what's the best, you know.
Let's be honest here. Most of the time we haven't a clue what we're doing, but we're trying. We're all trying our best. I want to bring in another parent, Jim McKee, because you have two sons, Jim. One's 24 and one's 10. And you seem to have been really aware of this idea of consent and having an open conversation with your sons about consent from a young age. Were you very comfortable with that? Or did you find that difficult?
I wasn't too bad, Ciara, with it, to be honest, because I was very lucky in the first school that my son went to in County Clare, North Clare, in UK primary school. They actually addressed the conversation of sex, for children and stuff at quite a young age, and sort of before they left primary school, heading to the secondary school, we had a parents' meeting, and it was a bit uncomfortable at the start, but it was quite informative and helpful, you know, for us to understand the children and pass on a bit of sort of gentle knowledge, you know, for what's ahead of them.
So how did you do this? Because I know there'll be lots of parents listening in today thinking, I'd love to actually know the first step here. I'd love to know how to approach this in a way that's not going to make my child uncomfortable or me uncomfortable. I'd love to use the right language. What did you do?
I kind of went along the line of sort of nature with animals and stuff, and said that how they sort of reproduced each other and stuff. And I went that way a bit and sort of kept it light, as light as I could, you know. And there was a lot of giggles and laughs, you know, when we were talking about our body parts and stuff. And I also put a big emphasis on no one was allowed to touch their body parts, you know. And it's like, I was watching TikTok recently and I was seeing there's a song on at the minute that tells kids to be aware of their body parts. And it's starting in school at a young age, which I think is brilliant, you know.
Yeah, I want to bring in comedian Claire Roach. She's also on the line. Claire, how do we have this conversation with our partners, never mind our children?
Oh, well, I kind of have to laugh. When I do discuss things with my own children, I have an 8-year-old and a 5-year-old and a 4-year-old. So when I talk to her about anything to do with her body, I can see my husband exiting the room. But I think the primary schools are doing what they can, and if the parents can kind of back it up at home as well. Like when Sive was 6, 7, and 8, she was coming home and talking about things like space bubbles and trying to understand what all of that was about.
But are women and men of our vintage, our age, are we good at having the conversation with each other in our own intimate sex lives?
Consent has always been there. Except teaching it to young people is fairly new in the last 2 decades. In terms of adults having sexual encounters with each other and asking for consent or not having consent, I think that discussion is out there. I think that more and more people are entering into sexual activity and giving a yay or a nay on what they want to do. I do find that awful, with that statistic about men under the age of 45, assuming it's an assumption that the woman wants to either keep going or needs to be, you know, that you need to keep on asking her. So that fits their narrative at that time, which is not a healthy way to be in a sexual encounter at all.
So it's back to the basics of women saying no and men listening, no means no, and that's the end of it. There's no further discussion.
Yeah, but the no doesn't have to be this severe no. No, I don't want to do this, but let's try and do this. No, could we try that maybe later on at another time? It's making the whole encounter sound like a really severe and awkward and horrible kind of scenario. It should be fun. It should be lighthearted. Both people should know what's going to happen, what's not going to happen. A conversation can take place before anything happens, which can actually add to the fun of it all. So in the heat of the moment, it is very hard to kind of have these conversations, but we need to look at it from kind of a more grown up and sort of fun way of using consent in these kind of activities.
All right, look, we're going to have to leave that conversation there for now. But thank you to all of my guests and thanks to Claire. I know, Claire, you have a show, Laughing Through Fear, When Getting Home Isn't Funny. It's going to be on in the Lark in Balbriggan on Sunday, the 12th of October. Men Go Free, and it is in aid of the Dublin Rape Crisis Centre.
Lunchtime Live with Andrea Gilligan.
With insurancebroker.ie.
Weekdays at midday on News Talk.